Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to a special episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewired.News podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that, I guess, I'm Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Peeklow. Rewired.News is dedicated to bringing you the best reproductive rights and social justice news, commentary, and analysis on the web. And the Team Legal podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
So, Jess, I really need you to do me a favor. Okay. I need you to just slap me.
What? No. Okay, Imani, look. First of all, you're in California and I'm in Colorado, so that's actually impossible. But what? Why?
I need you to slap me because I still cannot believe that the Supreme Court didn't totally crap the bed on abortion rights.
Right? I know. I am still stunned. Honestly, none of this feels real. But that's why I am extra, extra, extra excited that we have on the show today the lawyer who won it all.
Julie Rickleman?
Julie Rickleman.
Julie Rickleman!
We are speaking with Julie Rickleman, litigation director for the Center for Reproductive Rights, who was the lead attorney in June Medical Services versus Russo, and captain of the team that got Chief Justice John Roberts to sign on to an abortion rights win. That is no small feat. We are thrilled to have you talking with us. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Thank you so much.
Yay.
Yay. Like, this is starstruck.
It's exciting. This is exciting. And especially going to be exciting, I think, for our listeners, who some of whom are in law school now, some of whom have literally told us we want to go to law school and do reproductive rights law, which is amazing and not something that was available to me when I went to law school. So, yeah, this is exciting.
So exciting. So, Julie, I have just a real basic question for you because I'm super curious about this. I've never done it. What's it like to argue a case at the Supreme Court?
Well, it is absolutely amazing. Definitely my professional highlight, no doubt about it. One of the things I just want to say is when you walk into the Supreme Court, the building itself is just amazing. It is a marble building with fancy ceilings, and you can just sort of feel the importance of what you're doing just by being there. And I want to say that, it's hard to actually get into the Supreme Court. People might not know this, to watch an oral argument about a high profile case, like an abortion rights case. So the courtroom isn't that big. It's pretty intimate. And the center has a litigation team of about 25 people. And so the members of my team, many of them had to actually sleep outside or get into line at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, including one of my teammates who was breastfeeding, to do that, just to be able to see the oral argument. So when I got into the court and I saw that they had all made it in and were there, we actually did a really big group hug, and that was kind of an amazing thing to do right before the oral argument began.
And back when we could still hug people.
You know, absolutely. Actually, so this argument happened on March 4th, and literally a week later, the COVID pandemic hit all of us really hard. And so it was a crazy, surreal experience to be at the court on a beautiful blue sky day. There was a beautiful rally outside. It was sort of really the last time people in the reproductive rights and justice movement were all together from all over the country. And so that made it extra special for that reason.
You know, I just want to ask a basic question. Did you sleep the night before, or was that just not an option? Were you just like, I'm just going to power through and I can sleep when I'm dead?
I really did not sleep, though. I made a valiant effort. So, people say it takes a village, and it really does. I have two kids. I have two daughters. They are 12 and 10. And so I wanted my husband, who's also a lawyer, we met in law school, I wanted him to be there with me at the oral argument. So he came to DC the night before. One of my kids stayed in our house with one of my friends. Another one went to sleep over somewhere else. But my husband was there with me. And I thought, okay, my husband will be there. I'll be able to get a few hours sleep. This is going to be a big help. I am not kidding. The fire alarm in my DC hotel started going off at 11 p.m.
No.
And it continued to go off for like 3 or 4 hours. And just that, you know, just as terrible and high pitched as a fire alarm you imagine to be. And so I think maybe I slept an hour, maybe not even that. And when I got there, the one thing that made me feel better is one of my co-counsel told me that he actually didn't sleep at all, not even a minute before his first oral argument at the Supreme Court. So I thought, okay, I can power through, I can do this.
Do we know where the attorneys for the state of Louisiana were the night before? I have
we do not know. It was crazy. I really couldn't believe it, honestly. No, but it was quite funny because my co-lead counsel on the case, TJ2, was staying at the same hotel, and he had specifically told me, you know, I stayed at this hotel before. It's great. It's really quiet. It's going to be perfect for you. He started texting me at 11:30 and said, I'm so sorry. I really hope you don't kill me because of that.
Well, I'm sure he couldn't have known.
Oh, that's amazing. So, you know, oral arguments are obviously these pressure cookers, and you've got this limited amount of time. You don't necessarily know what is going to be coming at you. How do you just organize your thoughts? I mean, it takes me forever to organize for a podcast, let alone like a Supreme Court argument. What's the process like for you?
Well, it was a very intense process. So I, of course, felt so much what was at stake in this case for my clients, for people in Louisiana. It was the first abortion rights case in front of the new Supreme Court. And I just wanted to feel that I had done everything I could possibly humanly do to be as prepared as possible. I did not want to look back and think, you know, if I just read that one other case, if I just, you know, did this one other question in a practice session, things would have been different. So I prepared. I spent so many hours preparing with my team, you know, the team, it's always a team effort. And I did 8 different moots, so 8 different practice sessions.
Wow. With
lots of different lawyers, both from our movement, but also people that appear in front of the Supreme Court regularly. And I think we gathered all the different questions that I was asked at those moots. We really looked at them carefully, figured out sort of what the 30 or 40 questions were that I was being asked repeatedly. And then we worked together to figure out the best possible, most accurate, but also shortest answer to all of those questions.
Ooh, yeah.
And then I just practiced those, and I practiced them, and I practiced them some more. And I have to say that I was not asked a single question at the oral argument that I was not prepared to answer.
Really?
Yep. And that I
had not amazing.
Practiced answering. So
so like, you would say that you practice a lot more than, say, Jay Floyd did when he just rolled up to argue before the Supreme Court in Roe v. Wade, having not really brought any notes or practiced at all.
I would say that I practiced a lot. Yes, I really wanted to make sure that I could do the best possible job I could do. So
Do the other attorneys at the center draw straws to see who gets to be John Roberts in the moot arguments or like Sam Alito? How does this work? This is amazing to me.
Yes. So one of the practice sessions I did was with everybody on the team and other folks at the center. And yes, they love being the ones to ask the really
I'm sure.
questions.
Yeah.
So they are a tough group of justices, and there are many more than 9 of them. So that was definitely a tough moot.
So, you know, Jess and I are both former litigators. So are there any pretrial rituals that you do? You know, do you have a special pair of socks that you wear? Or do you, you know, I don't know, praise Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor 4 times? I mean, is there anything that you do? Or do you just sort of center yourself, breathe, go in, and just kick butt?
The things I did is I tried to actually eat really healthy food the day before. I had oatmeal with fruit the morning of the oral argument, in addition to some coffee. I tried to get some exercise, and I actually did try to do a little bit of sort of meditation. I don't think I was really successful in clearing my mind. I don't want to lie that I was able to do that, but I did sort of try to do just a little bit of, you know, self-care, and having my husband there was obviously a big part of that, so. I was really glad he was there with me because we met on our first day of law school. So it was nice to have him there. And he'd been taking care of the kids for many months. So,
oh my gosh, what a story. Like that arc of meeting your first day of law school and then having him take care of the kids while you're kicking butt at the Supreme Court. I love that. That's fantastic.
Yeah. it was pretty, when I walked out, so the way it works at the Supreme Court is once the oral argument is done, all of the folks who were listening leave, the lawyers leave last because you wait for everyone else to go out. And so everybody was gone and I think was waiting for us on the steps of the Supreme Court. And I walked out and I went straight to my husband and he was crying. And my husband does not cry very often, but he was crying.
That's really sweet. So he was super proud of you.
He was really proud.
Did your kids get what was going on? I have kids around that age and they are like so not impressed with everything. So like, were they like, my mom is doing this really amazing thing? Or were they like, I'm hungry. Where are we going for lunch? I was told there would be brunch.
I was told there would be snacks and I have not seen a single snack.
Yes. They, you know, probably more towards that end of the spectrum, but no, actually so I have two daughters. My younger daughter really actually loves talking about the fact that her mom is a change maker. That's the language they use at their school when they learn about, you know, various parts of history and the civil rights movement. So I think she's really proud of that. And I actually think during, you know, COVID-19, it's obviously been incredibly hard for many people and their families, but they have actually watched me get on the computer every single decision day, watching SCOTUS blog, because we didn't know a day would come out. So they would see me get ready, wait, you know, see my reaction when we didn't get it yet. And so I think they've actually got a much better sense now of what it all entails. And they were really, really excited when the decision came down.
So when you saw it, what was your first reaction? Because mine was, I burst into tears. Like, I was just kind of like, and I can't even imagine what it must have been like for someone who actually argued the case. So what was your immediate reaction?
You know, I feel like I still haven't really had a chance to process it, to be perfectly honest, because I had so many things that I just needed to do once we saw the decision. So I saw the decision. I saw that Justice Breyer had written the plurality and that Chief Justice Roberts had joined. So I knew we had won and we had locked the law. So the most important thing we needed to do is we needed to tell our clients. We needed to tell our other clients, and then we just had to get ready for the day. So there wasn't much space for me to process it. And I think I'm still kind of working through it. But really, it was just a huge feeling of relief because, as you all know, their abortion access in Louisiana is already really, really hard. There are only 3 clinics left. And if access had become even worse, if it had decreased even more, it just would have been devastating for people in the state. And you know, the vast majority of people who need abortion in Louisiana are people who are struggling to make ends meet, people of color. And those folks are already the ones who are just experiencing the racial violence and the racial disparities around COVID-19. They did not need the state of Louisiana to decrease their access to abortion even further right now. So really, it was just a huge sense of relief.
What was it like having that call with your clients, like to deliver that news? What's to describe that moment? That, like, I just got chills even thinking about it.
It was really a wonderful moment. They, my clients are amazing. Hope Medical Group for Women and the people that work there, they just, you know, work day in and day out to just try and provide abortion services to their community. In June, this June was the 40th anniversary of their opening in Shreveport, Louisiana. So they got to celebrate being there in that community for 40 years.
Wow.
And they really, you know, they're just my heroes because they work under such difficult conditions. They have protesters out there all the time. You know, the state coming in, trying to investigate them, shut them down for unjustified reasons. And so it was just amazing to be able to tell them, you can stay open. You don't have to jump, you know, you and your patients don't have to deal with one more barrier. And this case is over after 6 years. It's been 6 years.
6 years.
That's another thing I think people don't totally understand. I mean, we cover these cases and Imani and I are both lawyers, but litigation lasts a long time.
Really long time, and almost to the day, because we filed the case in August 2014. So it'll be, you know, 6 years exactly in about a month. And just, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of work for us and our client over those years.
But certainly the work isn't over, right? I mean, there's 4 cases that the court is taking. Apparently next term, you know, there are cases that are percolating in Louisiana. that are ongoing. And so what's next for abortion rights in the state? What's next for abortion rights in the courts? Tell us what to do, what to expect, Julie. Guide us.
You are absolutely right. The fight is not over. And I want to sort of speak from both realism and optimism. So, you know, realistically, we have to understand that what this decision did was just preserve the status quo. And we all know that the status quo is not good enough for abortion access, that we actually need to work to expand access, reduce racial disparities, make abortion more affordable. So the fight really continues. And you're absolutely right. There are, you know, a couple of other lawsuits just in Louisiana, many, many lawsuits around the country, and the opposition is relentless. It keeps passing restrictions year after year after year at the state level. And so just in the middle of all of this, in the last week, Tennessee passed another one of these bans, you know, all-out bans on abortion. So instead of trying to help people right now who are struggling with COVID, with losing their jobs, with trying to take care of their families, they are passing laws to ban abortion. So the fight absolutely continues. And I think in addition to the bans, you know, there are laws out there that would make it almost impossible for people to get an abortion after about 15 weeks. Other laws that would extend mandatory delays. So, you know, it's not enough to make people wait 24 hours and make two trips to the clinic. Some states want it to make it 48 hours or even 72 hours. So we have to continue to fight against all of those restrictions, state by state and law by law.
A lot of fights still to come. What would you say to our listeners who are in law school thinking about going into reproductive rights litigation or maybe considering law school? Like, there's work to be done. What should we tell them?
I would encourage them to do it. Come join us. Come do this work. I have been a lawyer now for 23 years, I think, if I'm doing my math.
Hot damn, that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations for surviving that long. I was out after 13.
Yeah, it's 20. I graduated in 1997, and I have spent pretty much a little bit more than half of my career doing this kind of work, and it is hard, and I can't, you know, pretend that I have great work-life balance, but I really believe in what I do, and that's always what I wanted. I wanted to have a job that I could feel proud telling my kids that this is what I devote most of my waking hours to, and so I'm really glad that this is what I've done. Like I said, there's a lot of work left to do, but I encourage others to join us because we need lots of people, you know, of all different experiences and backgrounds to be part of this fight.
Julie, thank you so much for your time. This has been amazing. I think Imani and I could probably keep you on and talk for like another hour, but
absolutely.
Congratulations to you and your team for such a phenomenal win. Thank you all for all your dedication and hard work for, you know, fighting for the rights and access for all of us. That is really outstanding work. So good job all around.
Yeah. And thank your husband and your kids
for being
seriously
so cool.
And giving you space to make to rack up this amazing win for pregnant people in Louisiana.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that you had me. We love listening to this podcast. So thanks for covering these issues, and thanks for always being fun to listen to.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. My God, you guys, we got so many donations in the last 2 weeks. We are blown away, like entirely.
Just blown clear out of the sky. So we want to thank you so much to Matthew and Steven, who each gave extremely, extremely generous donations. Thank you very much. Thank you to Andrew, Brian, Aaron, Jonathan, Stephanie, and Timothy.
And Imani, we also got a bunch of new monthly donors, too. So welcome aboard the Team Legal crew to Ariana, Amelie, Sarah, Angela, Clarissa, Keith, and Mackenzie. We are so psyched to have you. Thank you.
So that's going to wrap it up for us today. If you'd like to talk to us about any of this stuff, you can follow me on Twitter at Angry Black Lady. You can follow Hegemami on Twitter at Hegemami. And you could, and you really should, follow Rewire.news at Rewire_news.
And our first Instagram Live was this week, Jess.
It was so fun.
It was really fun. Like a couple of middle-aged broads on the Instagrams.
I'm going to put a captain on next time. Get more in character.
Captain and a turban. But we are going to be doing more Instagram Live. So you should go on to Instagram and follow at rewire.news because that's where all the action's going to be. There's also a lot of action in our Facebook group. We've got about 1,300 members. So you should walk, don't run. No, wait, this is run, don't walk.
Run, don't walk.
Well, walk because, you know, you don't want to get overheated. So just take a nice amble over to Facebook. Look for Boom Lawyered. Answer
the
questions.
Make sure you're wearing a mask.
Make sure you're wearing a mask because self-distancing and mask wearing is important. And we'll let you right in.
Yes.
And aside from that, Jess.
See you on the tubes, folks.
See you on the tubes, folks.
Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason Piglow and Imani Gandhi. Mark Folletti produces the show.